Hello, and welcome to Focus, the Catholic Answers podcast for living, understanding, and defending your Catholic faith. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and I think what we'll be focusing on this time is living our Catholic faith. I was going to say your Catholic faith, but I share that Catholic faith with you, and living it in a way that makes a difference in the world, in the lives of other people. And there's more and more interest these days in things like social justice and lifting up marginalized communities. The Pope talks about it. Everybody talks about it. It's everywhere in the secular media, in the Catholic media. And the Catholic Church actually has significant and important contributions to make in this area, things that will be helpful to help avoid errors, avoid spinning wheels, avoid even doing damage when trying to be helpful in the development of all the different areas of the world, whether it's here in the United States or around the world. To help us talk about that, we've invited Jim Kavnar. He's the co-founder of Cross Catholic Outreach, which has a mission to mobilize the global Catholic Church to transform the poor and their communities materially and spiritually for the glory of Jesus Christ. Thanks, Jim, for being with us.
Good to be with you, Cy.
So everybody's talking about development. We were just doing an interview before with someone who's in investing, and people want to invest in a way that's good for the environment and good for developing communities and marginalized communities and all that. What does the Catholic Church have to offer in all this?
Well, the Catholic Church has a long history of teaching, of what we call Catholic social teaching, that goes back to the 1890s, when Leo XIII published his famous encyclical Rerum Novarum, and it goes all the way forward to today. And what the Church brings is a vision of how human beings and their communities and societies, how they should be developed and what they should be like. And basically, integral human development is the name that's been used now since the mid-70s to describe this vision of how people's lives and communities can be developed, both materially, socially, and spiritually, to bring about the greatest good. Pope, now St. Paul VI, and his encyclical Populum Progressio, 1974, he's the first one to use the term. He says, integral development promotes the good of every person and of the entire person, by which he means the body, the spirit, the mind, the soul of every person. And then that's embellished a little bit in that encyclical. And then for other encyclicals cited this term. But, we have a long relationship with the Vatican and with the departments in the Vatican, or what they call dicasteries, that specifically relate to Catholic charities. And so in 2003, when we first developed this close relationship with what was then called Pontifical Council Cor Unum, One Heart, which was the division that oversees Catholic charities, I started hearing about this term. And I looked it up in the Vatican website and saw it was used by various popes and encyclicals. But when I asked, I said, well, do you know any place that this is being implemented? And Cardinal Robert Sarra was at that point the president of Pontifical Council Cor Unum. And I said, we're looking for some good models of it that we could learn from. And they looked at me blankly, he and his number two and number three person in the department. And I said, so we're looking for some good models, and all of a sudden they jumped to their feet and they said, well, you're the model. And I said, well, that's nice of you to say so, but, I'm thinking to myself, uh-oh, they don't know anybody.
Yeah.
And I said, that's nice, but do you know of any place in the world where you feel there's Catholic agencies or organizations or charities implementing this vision of integral human development? Well, then they talked Italian, so I had no idea what they're talking about because I don't speak Italian. And then they brightened up and they said, yeah, we thought of somebody. It's this man in Haiti, and they told me the name of the guy, and he's got a good housing I think that would be a good one. I said, I know him. We're already supporting it. You got any others? And they said,
more Italian.
Well, no. Yeah, okay. I said, well, no. I said, well, I brought write-ups, reports that I've done on three of our partners overseas that I think are great examples of what you and the popes are talking about, that are really implementing this. They don't even know the term. But just because they're committed Christians,
they
and they love people and they want to help, they're doing it.
Yeah.
It just comes out of knowing God, knowing the scripture, loving people, and they're doing it, doing what you're talking about.
This is extraordinary to me because there is the theory, and in theory, it's actually something that appeals to Christians. I think it does not appeal to everyone, because there's lots of people who will say, "Oh, you Catholics, you know, you're focused on the spiritual," and it just gets in the way of what we're trying to do, which is get these people out of poverty. And I guess there need to be concrete examples in the world so that people can see what we're talking about. In other words, and do you have a sense now? I mean, how long have you been doing cross Catholic outreach? How long have you been?
We opened in January of 2001. So we're 21 years old, and pretty soon we'll be 22 years old.
Okay. So in that time, are there things where now you, because you went to the Vatican to ask them for these examples. If someone were to say to you, "Look, Jim, we just need to get people out of poverty and all this spiritual stuff you want to do, come on, you can get to that later." Are there concrete examples that you can point to and say, actually, no, don't wait around to do this later. Integral human development works better, and here's why.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of examples. Let me tell you the first one that we ran into that was a real eye-opener, frankly, for us. This goes back to 2003, 2004.
Okay.
And I got a request from an organization in the Philippines. We had a number of projects in the Philippines, and our project officer was there and met someone from an organization called Couples for Christ. It was a movement that grew out of the Philippines that brought Catholic couples together, you know, to meet in small groups in their homes, you know, to share their faith, pray together, read the Bible, discuss being parents and all. And they had launched in 2003 an outreach to the poor and in the slums in the Philippines to transform the slums. So they were looking for somebody who could provide funds to build houses to replace these rundown shacks in the slum. And they wanted only $2,500 to build these houses. So we said, fine, you know, they wanted doing it for 50 families. So we sent them the money. And a few months later, we get back these photos of the houses, and we get the before photos of the shacks, and they're what you would expect. And then there's these photos of these beautiful two-story townhouses. And we were just stunned. We said, $2,500, you know? And so I got in touch with the leader and I said, "This is great," you know, because he wanted to do 50 more. And I said, "How about 100 more? Now I got 200, we can get the money, you know, just," he said, "Whoa," he says, "it doesn't work like that." We spend 12 to 18 months working with, say, 50 families who live contiguously in an area of a slum. And we work to change their hearts and their minds and their relationships and deal with their addictions and their domestic conflicts and all of these things to transform them. Because if we don't change the hearts and values and relationships, we can build these beautiful new houses, and in 2 or 3 years, it'll all be a slum again. And so I went over there to see some of these places.
Yeah.
And we're looking at this one area, and it's these beautiful townhouses, these ones that I had seen. And when I got there, it was already 5 years old. It looked like it had just been finished last month. It was just incredible how well taken care of. And we talked to one of the women who lived there, and she said, you know, before Couples for Christ came in, it was dog eat dog, everyone for himself, no one trusted anybody, you know, everybody was out whatever they needed to survive. Says, now we're a community. We pray together, we help one another, we cooperate together to keep our neighborhood clean, you know, and our whole lives are changed now. And it was amazing. And so we kept funding these, and now they're doing whole housing developments from the ground, from empty land up, you know. And one of them, we've already funded the funds for building over 100 houses, and they bring about such a transformation. And what was very fascinating was, they began this in 2003, 2004, and early on, there was kind of a disagreement among the leaders of Couples for Christ. Some people were saying, well, this is working great. why don't we get some of the fraternal organizations and the big businesses involved in providing the money? It doesn't all have to be Couples for Christ. And so, you know, there was a real disagreement for a while, but it led to them splitting off a separate branch that did everything the same in terms of getting people together, getting them to cooperate together to build the new houses. But they left behind the entire spiritual program. And so I was over there in 2019, and I said, you know, I've heard about this. I said, how did it turn out for the group that split off and it did everything the same except left behind the spiritual program? I said, oh, 3 years later, it's all a slum. And I said, really? Can you send me some photos of this? You know, and so I got a couple photos. Isn't it right? It all looks like a slum again. And 5 years before, 3 years before, it looked like those first photos. And so this is what, you know, developmental economists call a natural experiment that developed. Yeah. And so we, you know, we got to see it for ourselves. Now we see it elsewhere. I was in Kenya, and I was meeting with a couple of Franciscan sisters who had a few years before started a ministry to young people out of high school, but living in one of the worst slums. Nairobi is ringed by five really terrible slums. You add them together, it's the biggest in the world and worst in the world. One of them is the Humura slum. And so they live on the edge of it. And so I went, we've been supporting them for a while, but I'd never visited personally. So I was there in 2019. And so I went to see this class they were teaching with about 100 young people there. It's called a values reorientation class. And it's to teach different values from the values that they have, you know, okay. So I'm thinking, oh, that looks good. You know, the signs on the wall, the values they teach, responsibility, faithfulness, integrity, you know, and all, and, you know, look good, honesty. And so we, you know, and so we were guests. And so they asked us to bring some greetings, say a few things, and they all speak English, you know, and so we did. And then they said, well, we wanted you to meet a few graduates. So we meet and they said, by the way, you know, the people we're going to meet, these are, you know, they were surviving in the slum by robbery, doing drugs, prostitution, theft, you know, so that's just so you know where they come from. So we go and meet these dozen young people. And so we get introduced and then the sisters say, let them share some of their stories. So a young man stands up and he says, I live in the slum. I used to do a lot of bad things. And I'm thinking, okay, I know the inventory of bad things that I was just told they used to do. And he says, but I just finished a program to be trained as a chef. And I just got my first job as an assistant chef at a restaurant. And I'm hoping within a few years to save enough money to open my own restaurant. And I just want to praise and thank God for how he's changed my life. If it weren't for the grace of God, I couldn't possibly do this. And then a young woman gets up and says, I am also from the same slum, and I did a lot of bad things too. And I went through a course to become a cosmetologist, and I've just opened my own salon now. And I'm doing hair and makeup in the salon. And I just praise and thank the Lord for the change in my life. And it went around, and it was always the same. All this change and their new careers,
yeah,
and everybody praising and thanking God. And I'm thinking to myself, I saw the course. Where did this come from? You know, these are kids whose lives have been, well, kids compared to me anyway. Yeah. You know, kids whose lives have been transformed by God, and they praise God for it, and they are so openly Christian. I found out later how I met the 8 social workers. So while they're going through the course, these Christian social workers are meeting with them and praying with them and becoming kind of counselors and mentors for them. You know, what are your skills? Where do you think you could make a living? And well, we'll help you get enrolled in this vocational training. We'll help you do this or help you do that. And the transformation is, you know, amazing. And you see the power of combination of not only skills training, not only changing their ideals of what the right, how to live, but bringing them into touch with God who changes their hearts and their lives. And I see this all over the world, and I could tell many stories of our partners around the world where we see this in action. And so we know. And I'll tell you something. The developmental economists are discovering this phenomena. And you probably didn't notice it, but in 2019, the Nobel Prize in Economics was given to three developmental economists, two from MIT, one from Harvard. And what developmental economists have started doing, and I listen to podcasts a lot, and I love these economic podcasts like Planet Money. I don't know if you ever heard that one, and so I'm listening to Planet Money, and they did a series of 3-hour-long podcasts about these developmental economists experimenting with what really works for poverty alleviation. And so here's an actual story that came out of this podcast that blew my mind. They took two villages in Africa that are in the same language group, same culture, everything the same. They're 10 or 15, 20 miles apart, but everything else is the same. One village, they did a microfinance program, microloans, small loans, which is sort of the gold standard of how you help people economically in development work around the world today. The founder of that whole technique, Muhammad Yunus, got the Nobel Peace Prize for his development of that. Then the other village, they just gave him cash, just cash, outright gifts of cash. Okay, now people like me hear that and say, well, that'll never work. They'll spend it on drugs or alcohol or prostitutes or whatever, that's not going to make a difference. Well, they did baseline surveys door to door using these techniques, see where they at. Do you have soap in your house? How many have shoes? Do you have a television? Do you have electricity? This is a standard method of measurement of the levels of poverty and estimated income. So they did that in both villages. Okay. Then they do these two things. Guess what? The one where they just gave them outright cash was far more successful than the one with the fancy microfinance program. And I thought, this can't be right. So I bought the book. There was a book called Just Give Money to the Poor. And the guy who wrote the book was the one who developed this program or this strategy. So I bought the book and read the book, and my mind was blown. Well, that's just to tell you what development economists are doing nowadays. These are called randomized controlled trials. Yeah. This is the gold standard in both testing medicine as well as now testing poverty alleviation strategies. So three of these economists heard about a program in the Philippines called ICM, International Care Ministries. We know these guys. We gave them some help when they were launching. Now they're really big, excellent ministry. And we every now and then we do some joint activities together. And so my ears perked up when I read about this. So this is their standard program. They're started by a group of evangelicals who are successful businessmen who live in Hong Kong. Well, they used to anyway. I don't know where they are today, but they were in Hong Kong. And so their standard approach is they'll work with, let's say, 30 families in a village. And they'll get a local pastor to meet for, I think it's like 16 weeks. With these 30 families, couples, or individuals, and basically a basic, course on Christian teaching and values, just a basic gospel course. And then in addition to that, they give them another course, which their own trained people do, not the pastors, but the trained people do, in health and microenterprise. Health, how to maintain the health of themselves and their children, microenterprise, how to run and start, manage their money and small businesses, et cetera. Okay, so they picked 320 villages that they had never worked in and randomly split them into four groups. First group of 80 got the full program, the spiritual program plus the microfinance training. Second group got only the spiritual program. Third group got only the microfinance training. Fourth group got neither. And they did baseline surveys before, and then 6 months later, they did it again. The two groups that got the spiritual training with or without the microenterprise training had household income 10% higher than the other groups. And in order to make sure that they were being objective, the three economists that they picked to run this, one was a non-practicing Jew, the other was an atheist, and the third was a Christian. Yeah. So they wanted to be sure that they were not biased, you know. So this is going on now, and I can cite many other examples of these studies.
I'm just delighted with the examples.
That spiritual content changes this poverty interventions.
Exactly.
And they become more successful.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for. Was this evidence? I guess that. We can say these things, that integrated human development is important, but can we show it? And this is what's striking to me about what you're doing at Cross Catholic Outreach, is that you can show it, that this makes a difference. And I have to tell you, it doesn't strike me as all that different from St. Patrick going to Ireland, to tell you the honest truth. I mean, that he brings with him the gospel, and the gospel has this civilizing and kind of an uplifting message. People begin to see their lives differently. Ireland is utterly transformed by this. It doesn't seem so different from the Jesuits going to the Algonquin people, in that Patrick went to stay. He didn't go there on a weekend mission. He went to stay. The Jesuits went to stay. And what they brought with them was a message that wasn't just purely pie-in-the-sky spirituality, but a message of the incarnated God who loves them and wants their lives to be full. This, what you're describing doesn't seem so far to me from primary missionary evangelization in many places around the world.
No, it isn't. And in fact, these developmental economists, I'll tell you another story of what they did. They wanted to see the impact of Christian missions from centuries ago. So they went to this area in South America where the Jesuits, 250 years ago, had been in this area among the Guarani Indian tribes, which now cover about three or four different South American countries, the area that they were in. They were there for 200 years before some French king kicked them out. Didn't want them there. They emphasize education, agricultural training, as well as evangelism, and evangelized and brought these Indians into the church, and got baptized but trained them, and so they improved their state of life, you know, by giving them agricultural training and techniques and methods which were new to them. So 250 years later, they go to the areas, and you know, that had the Jesuit missions a long time ago, and areas with same people's groups lived where there were no Jesuit missions. Guess what? In the areas where those Jesuit missions were, 250 years later, the levels of academic attainment are much higher than at the levels where they weren't there 200 years ago, and the income levels of the families are 10 to 15% higher. That's the impact of Jesuit missions that, just like you described, combined evangelism and works of mercy and development that helped them with meeting their needs. And it had an impact hundreds of years later.
The primary difference, Jim, seems to be you're not wearing a Roman collar. You don't have a habit on. That now it seems that maybe the laity are being called into this integral human development in a way that we're being asked to maybe lead this now.
Yeah, well, that's certainly true a lot of places in the world that we work, but the church is involved, the clergy also. Mm-hmm. Just quickly, in Guatemala, we work with two dioceses there, and in one diocese, you know, we're working with 10 villages at a time to bring about what we call our community transformation program, which launches over an intensive 4-year period and then continues long-term partnership afterwards. So there, what we've learned from experience is that in these two dioceses, they have a program which the bishops implemented after the Bishop Synod, the Parecido Synod that happened, 10, 12 years ago,
yeah,
the documents that came out of that. And they implemented something called Santas Misiones Populares, which we translate People's Holy Mission. And it's creating home groups, you know, that in one diocese, they have 1,200 home groups. And the other one, they have 2,000 home groups. They meet weekly. They pray together, pray for one another, read the Bible and discuss it together. And then they talk about how can we serve our neighbors. And they go door to door and share the faith with them where appropriate or where they can. And also try to see what they can do to help them materially as well if they're in needs. Okay. In both cases, the bishops invest a lot in training the leaders of these groups. So when we come and provide the funds, where now they can put in new water systems, let's say, they don't have access to clean water. So we're going to provide the funds to drill a deep water well, 700 feet deep into aquifers that are really clean and pure. And it's going to be piped to every single house in the village. And someone has to dig all those trenches for all those pipes to go to every house has a faucet. Well, you've got the leaders already there, who already know the people. They organize everybody to work together for the good of the village. And when it's done, like the first one that was done in this one area, 326 houses now have water tap at their house. And water is available 24 hours a day, and it's clean and it's safe to drink. And they did it themselves. Professionals drilled the well. Everything else was done by volunteers led by local leaders who are known, and everybody gets invited to join a home group if they wish. And so that experience transformed the whole village. When they find out they can do something that transformative and major together, they're ready to take on the next challenge. Which, you know, so
yeah,
this is happening where the whole church is involved. The priests, they're providing the training. The lay people are providing the leadership. They're mobilizing villages, they're bringing together in prayer, and you see whole villages being transformed materially and spiritually thanks to these home groups, which are all lay-led.
I want to say two things to you and get your reaction to these two. First of all, I think there are a lot of Catholics today here in the United States, and I imagine around the world, who kind of roll their eyes when social justice comes up because it seems like a scam to them or something like that. And it seems like what you're saying is maybe what we should be doing is not rolling our eyes, but saying, like St. Paul says, let me show you a more excellent way. Does that make sense to you? I mean, do you have maybe, I don't know what your sense of all the different social justice movements are, but there it does seem like you're offering a more authentically Catholic response than just rolling the eyes.
Yeah, definitely. I think let me show you a more excellent way. Great quote. I love that. I remember that one,
okay.
but you have to understand something about Catholic social justice teaching. This is the Catholic Church bringing its wisdom because it knows man. It knows what makes people tick. It understands the heart of man. So it understands how societies should be ordered for the greatest good and the greatest flourishing of human beings. So the Catholic teaching on social justice is the church's advice to how society should be structured. There needs to be justice. There needs to be concern for the poor. There needs to be subsidiarity to push authority to act down into the lowest level, into the family, not taking away from the family the right and ability to raise their own children by taking it over by the state or something like that. So solidarity, you know, caring for one another. These are values that the church brings to societies so that societies can learn from the wisdom of the church. And lay people in the church are the ones who should be in those societies leading the way, bringing about a transformation of society to bring greater justice. The problem becomes when people think that, well, if we bring greater justice, there's no need for charity because everybody will have what they need.
Yeah.
Okay. So you get this contest, this tension between the social justice advocates and the charity advocates. And I see this a lot. And it's a false conflict. Social justice is the right ordering of society to each according to, you know, what he should have, you know, respecting the rights and of property and things like that to bring order and justice into society. But it doesn't replace charity. Charity comes from the love of God in us as Christians, manifest and transferred to the needs of others. There will always be a need for charity. And there will always be the poor. There will always be the social justice. Justice will never be perfect. That's part of Catholic teaching about justice. There will never be perfect justice in this world. There will always be a need to correct for injustice. It will always be there. And there will always be people who are in need and need help and the concern of others. And so, you know, there's a mistake sometimes made by Catholics who advocate for social justice, which we're supposed to do, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
The way the church teaches that you bring about, the way you address injustice is by speaking about it, by calling attention to it, by revealing it to be unjust, you know. And that's what we do. That's what the church does. And that's what active Catholics who are engaged in doing it. The mistake is thinking that, well, gee, if we get a just society, there's no need for charity. Number one, there never will be the perfectly just society. And number two, there will always be a need for charity.
Yes.
Because charity goes beyond just justice. Charity goes to mercy and forgiveness and reconciliation and goes to the quality of life and the relationship between people. So that in those slums, you know, social justice built everybody a new house and got them water because they're entitled to it. Charity did all that, but then brought to them love.
Yes, right. Just a magnificent witness. All right. So the second thing I want to throw out at you is, and I think many people will have a similar question. So I'm going to focus it on my situation, but many people, I think this can apply to almost everybody. Pope Francis calls us to go out to the margins. We've gotten this call from Pope Francis to do this. Most of us live and experience our Catholic life in the parish. And my parish, for example, there's lots of people who are doing very well, lots of people who are struggling mightily in my parish. So is this model of integral human development that you've taken in this lay apostolate you have, the cross-Catholic outreach, and that you've seen employed so many other places, is it applicable in the parish where Catholic life happens for most people?
Well, you do have to go out. Yeah, there's a need within the parish,
yeah,
for charity and care, because we all have elderly, we all have members of our parish who are not doing well, a widow who doesn't have the income that she used to have, and a divorcee who has 72% less income than she had before the divorce. And, you know, there's always need, you know, to help people in need and address their immediate need. And there's also always a need to work for justice for people who have been victims of abuse, neglect, whatever. However, you know, we need to look beyond just that. We spend the first hour of every day with our staff on spiritual formation. There's an opening devotion given by everybody gets a turn, gets their 15 minutes to give a spiritual devotion. And the rest, well, today happens to be book study day. So I'm in a book study, and we're reading the book called Saints and Social Justice by Brandon Vaught. And it's an excellent book because it has all these stories of various saints. Mother Teresa was the first one, of course, and how they model various aspects of Catholic teaching, you know, of Catholic social teaching. So today our what came out of the discussion, we were reading about, I won't go into the saint. St. Francis of Rome, but nobody knows. It would take a while to explain why it's relevant. But what came out of that is, to what degree should we use our own homes to take in the homeless? You know, in other words, in Isaiah 58, the prophet Isaiah says, "This is the fasting I want, says the Lord, to share your bread with the hungry, to bring the homeless poor into your home." And it goes on. The first time I took that seriously years ago and read that, I really felt convicted. I have an asset. I have a home, you know, and so my wife and I have taken homeless in that have lived with us sometimes as long as 2 years. And one of the other women said, yeah, I've been doing that myself. And my husband was sort of reluctant at first, but we took this woman in who I met on the streets and helped her get established. And, you know, in other words, we have assets that we can address on a personal level, the needs. I had a men's and women's group years ago, and there was a woman who used to, literally a bag lady who walked around at night with everything in a shopping bag going from all-night restaurant to all-night restaurant, you know, and then slept in the women's room couch during the day at a local theater, you know. And so our group decided, let's help her. So we got together, we found our social worker, learned more about her. She's, you know, mentally ill, and arranged with our social worker, you know, to get her an apartment, bought her a coat, because it's, you know, we were in Michigan at the time, it gets cold. And she obviously had a pretty raggedy coat, and, you know, and met her and talked with her, and eventually, you know, went with her to the apartment that we were paying for. And the social worker was going to, you know, help her get settled in this apartment. It's a complicated story. She didn't last. She ran away, went back to the streets. My wife took her into the department store to buy the coat, you know, and she's, you know, she's schizophrenic and hears voices, and, you know, a lot of the homeless people are. And my wife took her into the department store, and of course, it was a department store where, down the area where she walks around. So they kind of knew who she was. So people kind of backed away, got her this nice new coat. And a week later, we saw her walking down the street wearing the nice new coat on top of her old coat.
Yeah. So,
but, you know, my wife was a psychiatric nurse. So we've taken psychotics into our house and things like that. But we just had this honest discussion of, What could we do, you know, to reach out to the needy and the homeless, you know, and should we do that? And we had a couple of people who've actually done it. And, you know, I knew a church, an Episcopal church in Houston years ago, as that neighborhood turned into a slum and all the churches moved to the suburbs, they stayed put. And the couples with kids would bring mature single people to live in their house, to fortify the house, and they took in homeless people, schizophrenics, drug addicts, you know, and to help them into their own home.
Yeah.
And in fact, our second adoptive child came from one of their houses.
Isn't that
they took a woman in who was a drug addict and alcoholic and homeless and pregnant. And when she had her baby, she signed over the rights to have it adopted by a Christian family. And I got a call saying, we know you adopted one black kid. Do you know anybody else who might adopt one? I said, yeah, we're actually in a home study to adopt a second one. So, you know, we were beneficiaries, you know. And, but yeah, I do think we need to take more seriously, you know, reaching out and going to the margins. You know, in my own parish, there were some Spanish-speaking members of our parish who realized there was kind of an encampment of, you know, of trailers and this kind of a thing, where a bunch of Spanish-speaking immigrants on the edge of where our parish was, and, you know. So they started going there on a regular basis. They'd take some food, and they would take their Bibles and have a Bible study with them. And they just would go back, you know, every week and got to know them. And some of the kids got baptized as a result, and they mobilized other people in the parish to help contribute, to take some food to them. And so it's just people in the parish on their own, you know, it was just one family, you know, the grandmother, the mother, and her daughter and her granddaughter, or her daughter. So yeah. It was from a grandmother down to the great granddaughter. They were the ones that first reached out and got several other people to help them. Why not?
Yeah, right. You know? That's exactly it. Why not? And it does seem like if we've got this theory of integral human development, we need some humans to take up the call and do it. And I'm so grateful that you took the time with us. I'm very grateful for Cross Catholic Outreach and the work you do. I hope we'll get to talk with you about these things more, because I feel not only informed by what you said, but I feel quite convicted and inspired by it. So I just can't tell you how much I appreciate that you took the time. Maybe you'll talk to us again sometime.
I'd love to.
We
have so many stories.
Yeah.
I didn't expect one to come out of a book study this morning, but here's another story.
Yeah.
But, you know, the receptionist sits 20 feet from my door.
You didn't know.
She's the one who's taking in homeless women.
Yeah.
And she's got children and she's got a husband. And they're bringing them into their house and helping them.
That's the thing is if we don't start talking about it, we won't know what others are doing, and we won't know where there are those opportunities to join together and go out to the margins, like, just as the Pope is calling us to do. I think that wraps it up for us. Jim Kavanagh, thank you very, very much. Cross Catholic Outreach is the apostolate. You can find it on the internet. Find out what they do, and let's take up this call to integral human development a more excellent way. Thank you again, Jim.
Thanks very much, Si. It was great to be with you.
Thanks, everybody who listens. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you'd like to make a comment on it, send us an email. focus@catholic.com is where you can send that email. If you've got an idea for a future show, we'd love to hear that as well. And you know the drill, wherever you're watching or listening, if you give us that 5-star review, maybe a few nice words, that helps to grow the podcast. And you can always support us financially. It does cost a little bit of money to do what we do. And lucky for us, people give us a little bit of money. You can do that at givecatholic.com. I'm Si Kellett, your host. We'll see you next time right here on Catholic Answers Focus.